Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Here we go. Sears is greening up by selling men's suits made of what? A, organic cotton, B, recycled plastic bottles, or C, hemp?
I'm going to have to go with A.
Organic cotton?
Yes.
No, it is incorrect. They're actually making men's suits made out of recycled plastic bottles.
Wow. Yep.
Thank you. All right, start the green light.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main. Right.
Okay, let's see if we're set here. Just another day, at the Radio Ranch, and Dennis, I don't know if I, okay, here's what I'm going to do, Dennis, I'm holding to select, no, I don't think that's, oh yeah, let's see if we, you should be G something here, you would be GPGA, are you, is that the, no, you're the trying to figure out which one is it, Mikey, that he's supposed to be. That one?
Let's try it.
Let's try it. But I got to take.
Let's see if he takes. It's already there.
Testing. Oh,
see what he
okay.
Says. Can we hear?
1, 2.
Hey,
testing.
There you are.
Hey, we got
now, technically both of those will work for him.
Okay. Technically, I could have you in stereo if I wanted.
That's the only thing that's working is Dennis.
Dennis is the only thing. I'm working. I'm here. I'm here. You can actually turn your mic up a little bit if you want in that end.
Oh, there we go. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm all right.
Yeah?
I guess I'm in better shape than the radio station right now.
It's
so.
like testing everything I've learned in college. You know? Radio
you know,
challenge.
Exactly. It's Radio Challenge 2012 with Mike Novak.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, and there's the music still there. Okay, good. So that's still working.
I mean, it's a good song. If there's any song that's going to accidentally turn up, why not it be that one?
Yeah, you know, why not?
Good planets are hard to find.
So here we are. Great show today. I've got all kinds of different kinds of things on the program. And not only am I having technical difficulties here in the station. Uh-oh. And Dennis went running. I'm fine. I'm cool. I don't know what you're looking for. Why? What did I do now? Is there something else wrong? Was it a little loud for you there?
Really loud.
Oh, my first guess. Okay. Part of our problem is we've got the headsets ganged together here. Okay. She doesn't get to have her own volume. You've got what?
Can it still go down? It's really
oh, no. It can't because
okay,
it's going
it. Okay.
because it's going into my head.
That's fine.
And I'm half deaf. All right, so I have to hear this. Now, see, this is a person who doesn't work in radio, and she's going, oh, no, it's too loud. I'm thinking, no, it's not loud enough. All right. It's the headphone challenge, right. We're on the same line here. Okay. Tell you what, leave a quarter in the little coffee cup there. And we'll see next time you're in the station whether you can get a separate headset. We got to pay for it. We don't have enough money really to get separate headsets here at the station.
I'll do what I can.
Okay. I'm going to try to be good and bring this down just a little. How's that?
That's a little bit better. Yes, thank you.
But I can't hear myself.
So turn it back.
I'm totally deaf. This is what happens when you work in radio most of your adult life. You end up like me. And that is Jace Frederick, who is here to start the program. She's in studio, and we're going to go in a direction that I don't really go into very much on the show, but I do claim that I do, so I have to do it every once in a while, which is that whole green living thing, which, you know, what's that category about? I know what gardening is. I know what environmental stuff is all about, but green living sort of crosses over to various things. And so and that's an interesting name, Jace, J-A-S-E. How does one get a name like that?
One just gets it.
But you just show up one day?
You just show up one day and there it is.
And there it is?
Okay. Yeah. They say this is...
Come on. They were talking about names earlier on Mike Sanders' show. Come on. There's got to be a story.
My brother named me. I was a late life baby, so they were all a lot older, and he got the privilege, and this is
really
what happened. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I don't think it's necessarily a great idea to have your siblings name you. Can I just say that? Is that all right for me to say?
That's completely fine. I think it worked out okay.
All right.
Anyway,
and she's with Jace Frederick Design. We will get back to that in a second. Rick DeMaio's taking a day off, but never fear, folks. Pat Skatch is here. Patrick Skatch will be here with our weather at 9:45. He's, you know, he sends us a lot of stuff anyway. He's the guy who's always doing the research. In fact, he is a climate research contributor with the College of DuPage Meteorology Department. And he's a cooperative weather observer with the National Weather Service in Chicago. And he did send me some stuff about the corn crop. And the various crops in Illinois. But I guess the corn crop, he gave me this chart. It says scale of the plant condition. And this is the corn crop. And is this in Illinois? I believe. Oh, it's in Kankakee and Livingston counties. This is just Kankakee and Livingston counties. Pat sent this to me. And plant condition. What percentage of the plants are in excellent condition? Zero. What percentage of the plants are in very good condition? Zero. What percentage of the plants are in good condition? 25%. What percentage of the plants are in fair condition? 25%. And the percentage that are poor or very poor? 50%. Yeah, that's a big wow. Here. And so Pat Skatch here. And then in the second hour, my buddy Joel Greenberg, who's a naturalist and author, is author of several books. I mean, the guy can rest on his laurels already. Joel, you can retire. You've done what you have to do. But he soldiers on. And one of the things he's been involved with and we talked about in the past is Project Passenger Pigeon. And for those of you who don't know, we will recap. Yeah, we'll recap the last 150 years where we where we wiped out a species that had billions and billions of members. We did that in about two decades I know, and you're shaking your head, Jason. It's amazing. We are a dangerous species. Let's put it that way. And we had proof of that this past week in Colorado. We're just a terribly dangerous species, especially to our own species, but certainly to other species, like the passenger pigeon, which we just took off the face of the planet in about 20 years. From billions that would blacken the skies for days. You could stand in one spot, and then a flock of passenger pigeons would fly overhead, and it would take days, and the sun would be blotted out. And we said, wow, that's cool. Let's start shooting them. Oh, they're good protein. Protein. And that's what we did. And so he's involved with this project, which will commemorate the death of the final passenger pigeon in 1914, whose name was Margaret, I believe. I'm suddenly not sure of myself. Martha, rather, not Margaret. Martha. Eh, she'll forgive me. She's been dead over 100 years. Or 100 years. Martha. And one of the things that Project Passenger Pigeon is doing is putting together a film called Message from Martha, Species Extinction and Survival in the 21st Century. And we'll talk a little bit about where they're going with that. And also, Joel and his lovely wife, Cindy, went out to the Gensburg Markham Prairie in Markham, Illinois, yesterday. He did invite me. I really wanted to go. My schedule didn't allow it. But we have some photos up on the website about that, which is really cool. And we're going to talk a little bit about prairies and how well they're cope. You know, they cope pretty well in terms of drought and dryness and heat. So anyway, Joel Greenberg, naturalist here. And then after the show, well, actually, no, this is the other part, Dennis, that you've got to understand. Not only do I have, I'm a little dicey here on these, on the headphones and things here. We don't know what's going to crash and burn here. And
absolutely.
We just sort of, we're winging it here. My tweet deck is just all messed up.
What was that again? Your what?
Tweet deck. Hmm. So you're not a Twitter guy.
I'm not a Twitterer.
Yeah, here's the deal. I've been using TweetDeck for a while. And Twitter in its infinite, and this was an app that was created by people who are not the Twitter people. Well, Twitter in its infinite wisdom decided to buy it, you know, so they could co-opt the app. And then they gave us a new version, which I downloaded to my computer, and then it wouldn't do anything. I've discovered that you have to have Google Chrome just to make it work, and I'm a Firefox guy.
Okay.
All right. Now, I could put Google Chrome on there, and I might. I'm probably going to have to. But I decided, you know what? I don't like this. I'm just going to uninstall the new version, and I went back to the old version, and now it won't work properly. So now I can't tell.
Making you pay.
I can't. Usually I can just sit here and see who's tweeting, who's saying what. I might be able to see that by going to the regular Twitter feed. I might not. I have no idea. This is just really, you know, me without my Twitter. It's like a day without sunshine.
This is a different day.
This is a different day. So, but you know, we'll still be tweeting out there as best we can. As Kathleen's doing that, and she did download the Google Chrome. I just hate being told you have to have this to make it work. Why can't you guys just all get along? All right, y'all, you crazy computer people, just get along. There you go. All right. So anyway, at the end of the show. One more thing, one more complication we'll throw in here. I may have special guests and I may not. I have not heard from them. We kind of made this arrangement that they might be here and I haven't heard anything.
Oh, I'm looking at my sheet here. Rivals of the Peacemaker?
Oh, you gave it away.
Oh, my goodness. Was I not supposed to do that?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
We'll see if they show up.
Okay.
And people can guess what that means, what Rivals of the Peacemaker is. We had talked at some point and I tried to communicate with them yesterday and crickets chirping, so I have no idea whether they're going to be here. And if they are, it'll be fun. And if they're not, there's not a whole lot I can do about it. So I'll just keep talking to Joel. And then after the show, I'm going to give you my whole life. I'm going to have some yogurt.
Yeah.
No. After the show, I'm going to finish my coffee and then refresh it. I'm going to go to the South Side to a bill signing ceremony with the governor.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the Southeast Environmental Task Force invited me to go to the Little Calumet River. And it says, and they say it's going to be 2 o'clock at 134th, roughly, and the Little Calumet River Bank. So we'll be walking along looking. Governor Quinn! Governor Quinn, are you here? Governor Quinn! And then if I find him, I say, oh, Governor, do you have a pen? Do you want to sign that bill? I got a pen. I'm going to bring an extra pen just in case. He's on the riverbank and he drops it into the Little Calumet. I mean, you imagine? That would just be terrible. It would be a tragedy.
Yeah.
It would be a disaster. And he's going to sign HB 3881, which effectively abolishes landfills in Cook County, which we've talked about mm-hmm. on this show. And if I get a chance, I'm going to sort of sidle over and say, hey, hey, Governor, you know what? Would you veto the Leucadia coal gasification bill while you're at it? And would you also veto that really bad plastic bag bill? Just kind of as a favor to me and all the people who don't like those bills. And there's a lot of us out there who think they're really bad. So, you know. So that's going to happen. That happens 2 o'clock, and folks are welcome to come to that because it's a public ceremony, and it's going to be at the Bobian Woods Forest Preserve, as I said, 134th, roughly 134th at the Little Calumet River. And so we'll all be out there. You know, it reminds me, and I've talked about it on this show, when Jimmy Hoffa disappeared, I was doing news in Detroit, and one of the papers printed a little map of where they thought he might be buried. So I went out there to cover the story. There were people out there with shovels.
Oh, wow.
They were there to dig up Jimmy Hoffa and claim the reward. It was, yeah.
That's insane.
That's welcome to Detroit, folks.
Yeah.
The Motor City, home of the late Jimmy Hoffa. All right. I think we got everything underway, and we're ready to go. Jace, that's all the time we have. Good night.
Thank you so much. Okay. I really enjoyed being here.
But just sitting here and watching the beginning of the show. That's the way it works. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
You've done this design thing for a long, long time. Was it always green, or like everything has this evolved?
It's evolved like everything. I like to think that what I've always done has always been responsible. And in that way, you know, you could call, I prefer really to call it sustainable design rather than green design. And those are actually two different terms in my world. Really.
All right. Explain how they're different.
They're different because green you think of as really the materials that go into green building and green design, the paint, the flooring, the tile, all the recycled content and the responsible manufacturing procedures and all of that. Sustainable is, you know, something that's, we talk about materials or resources being sustainable, and that means that they, you know, like if it's a rapid growth hardwood or something, then it's more sustainable than hardwood that's, you know, hundreds of years old that you cut from the rainforest and it never comes back. In design, I like to refer to sustainable design as something that lasts a long time for the people that are living in the home. And I do mainly residential design, so this is focused mostly on residential. But I see it as sort of a holistic approach to green or sustainable interiors, and that is you sort of design for the family that lives there. So you look at their lifestyle very closely and in depth and take that into account, and you...
Yeah, but some families are just going to have unsustainable lifestyles. What if you walk in and somebody says, I want a sustainable design, and you look around and they're just not even in the ballpark?
Well, I'm not sure that there's anything as an unsustainable lifestyle.
I think there is, but I could be wrong.
I mean, if you're living it and it's your life, then you can make it. If that's the way you want to go on living, then you can sustain that. So it's really about lifestyle. What it's really about is making a home that fits the way you live is really what it is for the long term, so that you don't wind up having to add on a room or tear down the house and build a new one, because really I forget whose quote it is, but the quote is that the greenest square foot is the one not built. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to take existing homes and buildings and make them work instead of adding, you know, increasing the footprint or tearing them down and building new. So that's really what we're talking about.
And I'm going to have you give me an example of that. All right. For instance, but first of all, I want to let people know that you have a question. You know, maybe you got a design, a problem you're trying to solve. And a lot of this is just problem solving.
That's exactly what it is.
773-763-9278. You can talk to Jace Frederick of Jace Frederick Design yourself. And we'd be happy to dive into a question and try to solve a problem if that's what you want. 773-763-9278. All right, give me an example. Maybe something you've done recently that you thought was a way to solve a problem.
There was a house in one of the northern suburbs. I'm going to say Wilmette. Yeah. And they had an attic room and a bunch of teenagers. And this attic room was the place where all the kids hung out.
You know, that
sounds
like a bad combination. An attic room and a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah,
that sounds like the beginning of a really sad story.
Yes, they weren't happy. But anyway, they had all these kids and all these kids' friends. And they were looking. They brought me in to see how they could design a new space where they were going to break through the roof and actually increase the size of the dormer and all of that and just like double the space. And when I found it, I said, we can actually do something with this space. And so by just doing some really creative space planning and some really creative furniture that did all the furniture had multiple purposes and
explain what creative furniture is.
Well, creative space planning is just really making the most of the space that you've got. When I got there, the walls were all lined with just tall laminate bookcases that were crammed with games and trophies and footballs and all of that.
Yeah, but that's what kids do.
Exactly, but they couldn't find anything because it was all just jammed in there, and every time they took something out, everything fell out.
Ah,
and there was
that's a problem.
The computer was propped up on a beanbag chair, and that's kind of where they did their homework. So we came in.
That's not good for your back,
No, it wasn't good for anything. And they were just kind of, and it was dark. And so anyway, we came in and we did a really low and narrow built-in that held all of that stuff, plus the TV, plus a desk that held the computer and the for homework and file storage and that kind of thing. And then we put in, when I say like creative furniture use, we did modular furniture so that all of it could be, it was kind of small scale, so it fit in the room, but it could all be moved around and used for other things. If they needed more seating in another corner of the room, they could pull a piece over there, or they could put it all together and somebody, you know, they could have a conversation pit. There was a big cocktail ottoman that could either have a tray on top and be a table, or it could be another piece of seating if they needed that. So by doing that, we actually kept them from breaking through the roof and adding on to this house.
That was their plan.
That was their original plan, and they brought me in to see how we would design that. And I said, let me take a crack at the room that's already
here.
Well,
see, now there's your point right there. I'm surprised you didn't start with that, because
I often bury the lead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you just did. You buried the lead on this. The idea was they were going to expand and use all the,
exactly,
these resources and energy and materials. And you said, "Hey, no, you really don't have to do that."
Exactly. I said, let's try what's here first. And if you're not happy with that, then we'll go on. But now it's like the great place for the kids to hang out. They're loving it. Their friends come. They can all just like flop on the sofa and get their homework done and then push that all away. And there's open storage for trophies so those can be displayed. And everything else is behind doors so there's no clutter. And, yeah, they're really loving it.
You know, and you know what happens the minute you walk away?
Well, yeah.
Entropy.
Yes.
Yes. Everything. It's like the end of the universe. Everything just floats away from the center.
Yes.
But I try not to go back and visit
my projects because I don't like to see how they've.
Yeah, but you're a designer. You can't possibly. But I guess the question is, are they still happy
with it? They are still happy. They are.
And all right. What about materials? One of the things I wrote on my website, and you can go to MikeNovak.net this week's show and get a link to Jace Frederick Design. And I talked a little bit about Mighty House, which is on Saturdays from 7 to 10, and Ron Cowgill, and he's a home improvement guy. But, you know, and I think you alluded to this already, his idea is low-flow toilets and insulation and that, mm-hmm, sort of thing. Okay, your green standards in terms of, say, a couch. What makes a couch sustainable?
There are a lot of levels of sustainable. And one thing that I would say up front is, if you're doing this and if you're researching this on your own, be very, very careful of greenwashing, because it definitely exists in the design and furniture industry.
Okay, and I hate to put you on the spot, but can you give me an example of greenwashing you've come across with regard to something like that?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to name names, but there is an upholstered furniture company that's out there saying that they are green. And when you go into it deeply, I have a client who has kids who have respiratory problems. And so we had to find furniture that had where the frames were done without formaldehyde additive adhesives and finishes, and where the cushion fill didn't have petroleum-based anything, and where the fabrics were not treated with any chemicals, flame retardant or stain.
But so you had this repellent. Company, and they claimed that they were
and the, yes, and as soon as and this my client is so tuned into this that we really went deeply into them, and we found that their fabrics are all in fact treated with everything that you know fabrics are usually treated with. So it can be the furniture can be partially green, the frames can be good, but the fabric's bad. The fabric can be good, but the frames are not. So good. The fill can be, you know, petroleum foam based or, you know, some other whatever.
Well, okay, you've mentioned
so
that
levels.
A couple of times. What is that all about, petroleum foam?
Well, that's just that's your basic synthetic foam rubber.
Is that the fallback position, the cheap
yes.
fallback position?
That's what most furniture has
the cushions?
Yeah.
Probably mine.
A synthetic foam. Because it's inexpensive
and what's
soft.
The problem with it?
It off-gasses. It's chemical-based.
Yeah, but you know
so
what?
It puts
I off-gas
air.
Myself. But.
Well, that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I mean, competition with my own cushions. But what about things like flame retardants? Aren't those things put in there too? And how
Absolutely.
Dangerous are they?
They are more dangerous than, well, I don't know if you've been following, but there have been stories in the Tribune lately that about they're rethinking the whole flame retardant thing because it's a standard and it's been a standard and a particularly tough standard in California. And so if you want to do this anywhere in the country, you've got to get past the California standard. Nobody can. So that's why everything, to a large degree, has flame retardant. But they're very toxic. And the thing with them is they build up. They don't leave your system. They're in your system always. And they just keep accumulating, and you don't get rid of them. So they're just there. And they're toxic. And
so what's the alternative? I mean, we're so... I mean, this kind of gets to the crux of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
We claim to be so concerned about the safety of our consumers, and yet the same thing that is allegedly protecting them is killing them too.
Yeah.
So how do you resolve that issue if we're absorbing all these chemicals, but they keep us from burning down our homes and killing ourselves? Is there a truth there? Is there a half-truth? What's the solution?
Well, and that's kind of the whole greenwashing thing comes in. It's like buyer beware. And as the study about flame retardant now are saying that they're not even that good at, you know, keeping us from burning down. So even though we've been putting them in, they don't really stop. They're not that efficient.
So we should be seeing something on 60 Minutes next where they will light up a flame retardant cushion and watch it go up. And then we'll say, why are we putting these chemicals into our systems?
Exactly. And every time your kid lies down on the sofa or they're in mattresses, flame retardant in mattresses is the number one thing. I mean, that's kind of where it started. And your kids are – and you're laying on there and you're breathing that all night long. You're breathing in and you jump on the sofa and it all, you
that's
know,
true.
Flies up boom, and you breathe
boom.
It.
I don't jump on the sofa too
well,
much anymore.
I was thinking more kids. But that's –
But I do
should,
a little bit.
You should. It's a lot of fun. So it's just constantly going into the air, and it's also in the cushions, it's in the fill, and it's, you know, pretty much everywhere. And finding things that is hard.
And it's in the covering as well, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
I know we don't have the phone. Do we have a call there, Denny?
Yeah, we got a call. Mark in Chicago has a comment.
Okay, let's go to the phone, 773-763-9278. I apologize to talking to Dennis on the air here. We're having a little technical snafu with the phones, but we'll go to Mark in Chicago. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hey, how are you, Mike? How are you, Chase?
Good.
I found the same thing. I worked with a number of suppliers in town and a number of green clients for many years now. And at the end of the day, certain sofas and furnitures for clients, we've ended up having to make ourselves in order to ensure that each of the materials were of the standards our clients are looking for. And I'm wondering if your back has been up against the wall to accomplish the same thing.
Well, you know what? Can I ask you a question, Mark?
Yeah, Mike.
All right. You say you make these yourself, and what business are you in?
Well, we've met before. I used to manage Green Depot in Chicago.
Oh, Mark, yes. Okay.
How are you, Mike?
Good. It's good to talk to you.
But obviously, that went sideways. And
well, but, okay, so you're in a related business, I take it, now.
Yeah, for years I've been a custom woodworker.
Okay.
And so, obviously, making a frame for a sofa or something like that is a piece of cake. But it was never my ambition, but the droves of people looking for something, and you do the research for their other furnishings, and I ran into the same thing. Part of what you're buying is what they're looking for and what you're trying to find, and then the other part is overwhelmingly wrong to bring into someone's home.
Don't hold back, Mark. Overwhelmingly wrong. Like that. But so that leaves you with trying to create the fabric or the material or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, finding the components separately is quite simple, because there's folks just dying to get in the industry with what is efficient and effective and doesn't have all the pollutants. And so if you find these componentries, you know, anyone could build a frame that's in that mindset, and we've been able to actually have better designs, because the clients show us their photos of their dream couches, and then we just pick up the fabric and we go to town.
And obviously, you can get the fabric. Do you have to worry about? And this is both to you, Jace, and Mark. If you're picking up your fabric and you're trying to avoid some of the chemicals that you don't want released in the household, what are the laws by which you have to operate in terms of fire resistance?
Well, the commercial settings, by far, you always have to for the fire guidelines. In a commercial setting, that's just the standard. In a residential setting, if you're making a one-off custom piece, you don't have to follow those guidelines, because you still have wood in the material. But often in furniture, like the what you would call it, like the spring portion, has a lot of magnesiums in them. Mm-hmm. When you buy the production-based furnitures. And so that is.
Did you say that was in the springs?
Yeah, the magnesium coatings are, you know, if you had a match to those, they light up right away.
No, so you're kidding.
Around. Yes.
And this is in the springs? I got to tell you, the spring is the last place that I would look to be afeared of. You know, that's the last place where I would think you'd have a problem. But now you're telling me that. So the spring, what else? I mean, obviously, well, the stuff.
Pretty much everything.
Everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much everything. And most people have not seen a couch on fire. If you ever have, you'll understand the whole process, because the fabric does take a little while to get going, and then that cotton or whatever foam they use on the inside lights up right quick. But as soon as it gets to that magnesium, you have the brightest, hottest, fastest flame you'll ever see, and then the whole thing goes up. So that's actually the bigger danger point when you break it down bit by bit. So when you stay away from the very dangerous high temperature magnesiums, then right away you've brought down the care for concern, and then you're okay.
That's amazing. Well, Mark, I appreciate your contribution this morning. What do you advise, and Jace, the two of you, what do you advise people to do then if they're concerned about this?
Well, it really is a case of just doing your homework and making sure that you look into if you have these, specifically like my client with the kids with the respiratory issues, just kind of look into everything that's going into that. And she and I have actually said, why don't we start manufacturing this? Because it's really so hard to find. And you, like Mark said, you find some pieces that are good, and then you get to some components that are good, and then you get to the other components of the same furniture line, and it's not so good. So just kind of do your homework and know what you're getting, And if you can afford to have it custom built, that's a really great idea. But that's the other issue with green, is that if you do find it all together in one piece, it's significantly more expensive than your standard, you know, room and board sofa. So you're dealing with finding it and then paying for it when you do find it, which is kind of criminal, but it's true.
Well, you know, we know that sometimes to be safer, it does cost a little more.
Yeah.
And our problem as a society is that all we think about is cost.
Is cost.
That's the only thing.
And I've had clients who were very interested in green until they found out what it would cost. And then they say, well, what would it cost if we didn't do that? And then we were back where we started.
Mm-hmm.
And the manufacturers, there are some fabric manufacturers and some furniture manufacturers that tried it for a while, and people didn't, because they weren't educated about the value of it. The manufacturers stopped making it because nobody was buying it, because it was expensive and because they didn't understand why it was more expensive. And so they pulled the lines because they weren't going over very well. So the idea is that they won't make them unless people want them. So demand is really, education and demand are really the ways to get abundant and cost-effective choices.
All right. So I guess the answer, Mark and Jace, is if you get somebody, you're bringing somebody in to do design, ask questions about everything. Ask about the frame. Ask about the covers. Ask about the stuffing. What do you call it? The filler.
The filler.
The filler, whatever.
Fill. Mm-hmm.
The fill.
Or the stuffer.
Ask about the springs. The springs. Boy, that's just amazing. Mark, thank you so much for the phone call. I appreciate it. Great contribution to the show.
Have a great day, you all.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. Elizabeth is on the phone. I'm going to get to her in just a second. Everybody hang on. We're talking to Jace Frederick of Jace Frederick Design. We're talking about designing green in your own home, and then we're going to have more of that conversation coming up.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soil as it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's Milorganite.com.
If your annuals and perennials are looking a little tired right now, it's okay to refresh them. Really, it is. And if you live in the city, a great place to do it is at Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center. You should check out their Facebook page, where last Sunday, Barb asked, any upcoming sales or specials? Ha! You'd think she was writing this commercial. Christy Weber replied, yes, we have tons of plants on special right now. Select 4-inch annuals are 99 cents. Lots of lovely petunias, pentas, cleome, verbena, cleome, by the way, spider flower, verbena, on and on. Our hydrangeas are half off, and as always, our half-off perennial section is chock-full of quart and gallon-sized perennials. Other tropicals are also half-off. This includes some nice hibiscus, bougainvillea, mandevilla, and more. Also, Christy said, we have select flats of bedding annuals on sale for $5. Come and check it out. That's what she said. It's a quote. For more information, go to ChristyWeber.com and click on Garden Center, or visit Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook, or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Look for the explosion of color. Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center is a proud sponsor of Dig In Chicago.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
And then the announcer said, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Actually, it's a New York Times article that was posted on the Care of Trees Facebook page, quoting from the Times, "We have underestimated the importance of trees. They are not merely pleasant sources of shade, but a potentially major answer to some of our most pressing environmental problems. We take them for granted, but they are a near miracle. In a bit of natural alchemy called photosynthesis, for example, trees turn one of the seemingly most insubstantial things of all, sunlight, into food for insects, wildlife, and people, and use it to create shade, beauty, and wood for fuel, furniture, as we're talking about today, and homes. For all of that, the unbroken forest that once covered much of the continent is now shot through with holes. Humans have cut down the biggest and best trees and left the runts behind." And that's really true. What does that mean for the genetic fitness of our forest? No one knows for sure. For trees and forests are poorly understood almost on all levels. It's embarrassing how little we know, one eminent redwood researcher said. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. They care about the forests and the trees in your backyard and on your street. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
A love song.
It's going to take him a while to do this. You know, I'm not even going to play this one. Hold on. It's taking them too long. Let's go to... I'm just doing a little bit of roulette here. There we go. We'll just do that. I will get to the love song part later. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're talking to Jace Frederick about design, sustainable design in your very own home. We're going to take another call here in just a second. Hold on. Just count it down. And with that, let us go to line one and bring in Elizabeth.
Oh, it's actually it's Dave in Madison who's on line one.
Oh, Dave in Madison. We lost Elizabeth? Okay.
Yeah.
Dave in Madison, how you doing?
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Great. Good morning.
Fantastic show, as always. I've become addicted to your show. I actually sat in my garden in my front yard. Well, it's not a lawn anymore. It's more native plants. With my computer, watching clips from your new TV show.
Dick in Chicago, Saturday mornings, 10 a.m., Comcast Channel 102. And I hope folks are following along also at mydiginchicago.com. Thanks for the commercial, Dave. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's outstanding. You know, back to this, the flame retardants, it's a really important point. A lot of these retardants are called polybrominated diphenyl ethers, or PBDEs. These are the things these put in plastics and stuff. From the last 20 years, they've pretty much, every 3 to 4 years, those chemicals have doubled in Lake Superior fish. And the reason is that they build up in the fat, they move up in the food web, and they're the new DDTs, they're the new PCBs. And unfortunately, those other old ones aren't gone yet, but this new set are building up to levels that are really significant. And so I think it's a real critical point that your guest is so cogently making. One other quick thing, you know, on the sustainable furniture, up here in Madison, in 2000 or so, a little bit before that, late 1990s, the entire county was in the top 10% counties for cancer risk for air pollution. That essentially came from one facility which used methylene chloride, a toxic solvent, to puff up urethane foam. They were releasing about 300,000 pounds of that stuff into the air every year. They replaced that, and you can do that with carbon dioxide, and increase that sustainability and remove those toxic chemicals. So just a little bit of an anecdote to show that it's throughout that life cycle.
Wow. Jace is writing that down, Dave. And she's going to try it in the future. Well, listen, as always, it's great hearing from you. I'm glad you're addicted to the program. Don't stop eating because you're listening to me or anything like that. Don't carry it too far. But it's always great to hear from you, and I appreciate your contribution again, Dave.
Thanks, Mike.
Have a great day. Jace, you know, it, so Dave brings up the point that this is the new DDT. This is what we're poisoning ourselves with. So people want to look at their design and take a baby step towards cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. What do you tell them?
Well, I mostly tell people not to panic. They can do what they can do as they can do it in ways that make sense to them, ways that fit their budget. So I'd say don't. The tendency is to go crazy green and think I've got to do, if I can't do everything, then I shouldn't, it's not worth doing anything.
You mean if I don't have the bamboo floor,
exactly,
my life is over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And please don't do bamboo floors in the Midwest. That's a whole other thing.
Oh, but, really? Okay. Well, tell me. Give me
well,
that thing.
Well, it's just, they're geographically inappropriate. I think that's probably mm-hmm. the best word I can use for it. And the carbon footprint on bamboo, unless we start growing it in the Midwest, you still have to get it here. So,
yeah.
And like locally grown, reclaimed flooring is, you know, hardwood flooring is much better than bamboo flooring.
Awesome.
And
okay,
more durable as well. But my point is just don't throw out everything and start. You don't have to throw out everything and start over. Don't pull your perfectly good windows out if they're not the latest energy efficient model. Because you pull them out, they go in the landfill. Wait till you need windows. Wait till you need things. As you need things, replace with more sustainable green things.
Do you have tips for saying, I know, you know, some houses have custom windows that they're built to the shape of the house.
Uh-huh.
And it really is difficult to find a replacement. I'm speaking from personal knowledge here. Okay. My 125-year-old home with the odd shaped windows mm-hmm. that I can't just match.
Yeah.
And I'm so far, I have not replaced them. I'm trying to figure out, and Ron Colgill and I go round and round about this all the time. You know, how I'm going to make my home more energy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
My home, you know, this not one's home, but my home. and so are there ways to do that aside from the usual, which is for me, it's caulking. It's the plastic stuff
mm-hmm.
in the winter, you know.
That's a really good way to do that. And I'm not a window expert because that's more on the building side. But I work with a lot of people and refer a lot of people to people that are window experts. And just, you know, until they absolutely need replacing, yes, caulk, weather strip, do the plastic, you know, because until you absolutely need windows, you know, there's no point in pulling out perfectly good windows that can be made more energy efficient by caulking or weather stripping.
So the goal, work with what you have, get somebody in, talk to them, get some mm-hmm. good advice. You can do that. Jace Frederick Design, go to my website, mikenovak.net, and her information is there. Jace, thank you for coming into the studio. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great.
Welcome to hang out to the end of the hour, because I'm going to the phone line right now and bringing in Pat Skatch. Hey, Pat, how are you?
Fine, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Pat filling in for Rick DeMaio today. And, of course, as I mentioned before, Pat is the Cooperative Weather Observer with the National Weather Service in Chicago, also Climate Research Contributor with the College of DuPage Meteorology. I can't even say it. Meteorology Department. Am I missing anything, Pat?
Oh, you pretty much covered it, Mike.
You sent me a real interesting, I mentioned it, or I don't know if you heard earlier, but I read the statistics about the Kankakee and Livingston County corn crop. It doesn't sound too good.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, Mike, real quickly before we go into that a little segue here, I took a look at rainfall for O'Hare starting from June 1st, ending July 13th, because that was sort of the beginning from the 14th on where we did have precipitation. From June 1st to July 13th, O'Hare was 3.5 inches below normal. As of yesterday, with the rainfall we've had, they're still 2.75 inches below normal. I also went and took a look on the 13th, Friday, at historic water levels for the rivers, and I looked at the Plains River and Riverside. Over the past 27 years, we've had the lowest level at Riverside of 1.54 feet. The second was 2.05 in 93, 220 in 86, and the date we're going to talk about of 1988, they were at 2.85. So we really, really have dried out drastically here, Mike.
I heard a story during the week about the river levels on the Mississippi, and it's causing a lot of problems with barges. And they, at one point, and I don't know exactly where it was, I don't remember exactly where it was, but it was down from, I want to say, 18 feet down to 3 feet. You know, it's just, but the levels are very, very low, aren't they?
Oh, terribly. And that's it. They just can't, you know, pass barges and boats. It just is, it's drying up.
And where do we go from here? Do you see anything on the horizon?
Well, we are going to get, you know, have rain come through here. In fact, we're going to have some rain possibly later this morning and through the afternoon, which I'll touch base in the forecast later. But we can't make up for this deficit, Mike. It's, you know, I'll get into the corn crop and the soybean crop, if you like, right now.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, this comes from my friend Kevin Wancho down in Kankakee County, and he's really took time this week to help us out. He's telling me that the corn crop pretty much is a disaster. It's on par right now to surpass the devastation he experienced back in 88 due to similar severe drought conditions. Excessive daytime temperatures, along with the lack of rainfall, is one concern. But really what's affecting the crop, Mike, is the overnight low temperatures. They are just way too warm, and the plant just can't respirate.
Mm.
All of his corn crop is now pollinated, and the plant is seeking moisture drastically, and it's just cannibalizing itself.
Yeah, you wrote that to me, and I thought I had not heard that before, but explain how the plant cannibalizes itself.
Because it's drawing moisture, what little moisture it has, from the bottom of the stalk, and it's attempting to send it to the ears and leaves. And this is causing the bottom of the plant actually to dry out, and it's evident by discoloration, you know, the browning. And if this plant continues to brown, and it browns 1 foot above the soil, there's absolutely no recovery, even with plenty of rainfall. So, I mean, they're at a point now where it's just, it's critical.
So it's like it's chopping itself off at the ankles.
Exactly.
Yikes.
Precisely.
That's unbelievable.
He did say that the technology in the development of the hybrid cordon seed, which he plants and most farmers do, has improved since 1988, and this has helped somewhat for the corn crop to be more tolerant, you know, to heat and dry conditions. But this was interesting. Presently, only 50% of his corn crop is in good or fair condition. The remaining 50% is in poor or very poor condition. And the very poor condition crop, it has very small chance to produce any acceptable yield, even if the weather conditions improve.
You know, and I think some of us observe this on a day-to-day basis, because I was at my neighborhood store yesterday, produce store, and picking out some corn, and it's all small. It's, you know, you don't see those big honking ears of corn that you usually see at this time of year. They're small. They look like young ears, and I assume it's just the water deficit.
Right, and the kernels are small too.
Yes, I did notice that as well. So they can't get the job done, unfortunately.
Right. Now, he feels that what's needed in order for this existing crop, what's left, to produce some type of an acceptable yield would be an inch and a half of rain per week until September. And primarily, daytime temperatures must be below 90 degrees, and overnight low temperatures really have to be below 60 degrees.
Well, yeah, but yeah. What's the chance of getting that, Pat? I'm looking at I read an article this week from some guy in the National Weather Service that said, this is our pattern. This is what we're going to have until the end of the summer.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
So we're not going to get that inch and a half of rain per week and those cool temperatures. We're stuck with what we have. So I'll tell you what, I saw the other day that we might have a chance for 100 degrees tomorrow, and I'm going to let people hang on for a second and get the forecast. I'll get back to you in 90 seconds, okay?
Very well.
That's Pat Skatch, and he's filling in for Rick DeMille today. We'll be right back with the forecast.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. On the line, I have Pat Skatch filling in for Rick DeMille. So what about that forecast? Are we going to hit another 100 tomorrow?
It's going to be close, Mike. We're going to certainly have heat index values above 100 degrees. Here's our forecast for today. We've got a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms later this morning and again in the afternoon. We're going to be in the lower 90s. Tonight, again, showers and thunderstorm chances continue. Low to mid-70s. Again, we're not really cooling off. Tomorrow, windy and hot. I'm going with a high temperature of about 98 degrees. Some areas could reach 100. It's going to be humid. Dew point temperatures are going to be, you know, about 70 degrees. And heat index values will be 105.
Yikes.
And for the remainder of the week, daytime temperatures are going to moderate to about normal values, which is around 85 degrees. And then they're going to climb low to mid-80s and continue to rise each day. And we do have a slight chance of rain every day.
What is the you're the statistics guy? What's the record number of 100 degree temperatures in Chicago during a season?
I don't have that in front of me, Mike. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, you got to check for that and fire it off to me during the week because I'm starting to think about that. I know we didn't quite hit it last week, and that disappointed me because if I'm going to be really hot, I want at least a record. Okay, I want to get a record out of it. You know, 99. That now you're just messing with me, okay? You get to 99, you're just messing with me. If we're not going to get to 100, so I want you to check that, and you can fire that off to Rick and me for next week.
Very well.
All right, great to hear from you, Pat. As always, appreciate it. You filling in and try to have a wonderful Sunday.
Okay, thank you too, Mike.
All right, take care.
Bye bye.
That's Pat Skatch, and he's great every week. Always sending me just fabulous stuff. About the weather statistics and stuff. And he'll copy both Rick DeMille and me, and it's always fun to see what he comes up with. In the second hour of the big show today, I've got my buddy Joel Greenberg, as I mentioned before. We're going to be talking about Project Passenger Pigeon. We'll talk about the Markham Prairie and maybe more. And then at the end of the show, I don't know if I... have my special guests or not. We're just going to sit here, and Dennis, you might have to come in and entertain some folks. He's got his thumbs up, so he'll do that. Stick around for the second big hour.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Like when you said you felt so happy you could die. I told myself that you were right for me. It felt so wrong in your company. But that will ever to make us stay in the night.
Hey, welcome to Dance Factory. Oh, no, wait. I got that wrong. But I didn't know there was a techno version of this song. This is the, Dennis, maybe you knew that. Somebody that I used to know. It's a big hit now, you know.
Okay.
But I didn't know they had a techno version of this.
I thought the station was going to Dance Factory mode.
Yeah, that's right. It's like another technical malfunction. Dance Factory now, starting at 10 a.m. on Sundays.
Lance and dancing.
That's right. Oh, dear. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. It's my pleasure to have my buddy Joel Greenberg. And do I get to mention
sure.
your wonderful partner here in the... she's here. She's just in the background. You don't even have to speak.
Thank you.
But Cindy's here, okay? We'll acknowledge her. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. When we got here at 9:30, a red-tailed hawk was soaring over the radio station.
What? What?
Yep, a nice soaring, kettling overhead. So a little bit of nature, one of our larger raptors inhabiting Jefferson Park.
That's great. You know, I several years ago was sitting on my back porch. Kathleen and I were sitting on the back porch. Telephone pole in the back in the alley, and I looked up, and there was a raptor. And I don't ID these things. I'm not a naturalist like you are. I'm a radio guy, all right? But I can tell a raptor when I see one, especially when it swooped down in the neighbor's yard, grabbed a rat, and flew off. That's nature in action, baby.
And it's good that it grabbed a rat as opposed to
a cat. What were you going to say?
A robin. I mean, there's the most common backyard bird hawk now is one that eats birds, makes the concept of bird feeding different. You used to put out seeds to track birds. Now you track birds to feed the hawks. But that's the core.
Well, they could take a few of those sparrows away if you ask
me. There you go.
Because I can remember my first experiment in my backyard with putting up a bird feeder, and 100,000 sparrows showed up. You know, I thought we're going to get to see all these different birds, and won't that be fun? No, I got 100,000 sparrows, the occasional pigeon, and a few squirrels. And
be happy with the squirrels. They're the only native species of the three.
Yeah, that's and squirrels. I don't know what it is about squirrels. They still amuse me. I just find squirrels really amusing. I know that they cause problems in gardens, and they'll dig up bulbs and stuff, but I find them amusing. Now, do I get to tell? I've got kind of some people are might be a little squeamish, and I'm trying to debate whether I should tell my natural, since you're a writer. And by the way, you should know that Joel is an accomplished guy. All right. He's the author of A Natural History of the Chicago Region, co-author of A Birder's Guide to the Chicago Region, editor of Prairie, Woods, and Water, Two Centuries of Chicago Nature Writing. You're the chief cook and bottle washer for the Birdzilla blog, and you work on Project Passenger Pigeon, among other things. So we'll get to Project Passenger Pigeon in a second, since we were talking about pigeons a second ago.
Tell us your squeamish story. I like gore.
All right.
I mean, besides
kids listening, try not to have breakfast while we're talking about this, because it's going on in my backyard right now, right this very second. And I wouldn't have told it except that I had an incident on the way out to the station today. Several weeks ago, hottest day of the year, 103 degrees. It was the 4th of July. Kathleen and I, believe it or not, were working in our community garden across the street. And I came home to get something, so a tool, some water. I forget exactly what I was doing. And I'm walking into my yard, and I look in the gangway next to the garage, and there's a cat that I had seen before in the neighborhood, because we have a fair number of feral cats in the neighborhood in Logan Square and in the city. It depends on the neighborhood you're in. You're going to find a few of those. And then I noticed the kitties, those mama cat and her two little kitties. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? Now I got to figure out what to do with two little kitties in the yard. And because last year we had a little kitty in the yard, and it ended up adopting us. You know, we trapped it. We got it tagged. We got it neutered. It was pregnant when we took it in. I mean, this is a kitty. It was probably 8 months old, you know, or just past the point at which it could actually accomplish that.
Barely younger than human beings.
So. Exactly. And and so we took the cat in, and we've had it ever since. And it's like, yay, okay, we got ourselves a little kitty, and it's a very sweet little cat, and actually more like a dog, because we'll let it out in the yard occasionally, and if it starts to go down the gangway, go, hey, get back here, and the cat comes back. The cat listens to us. So I'm like, cool. I like a cat that acts like a dog.
Did you call him Fido?
We call the cat La Gata, which means the cat in Spanish, because it's a female cat, and we live in a Latino neighborhood. So The name of the cat is La Gata, the cat. So I go out and it's 103 and there's kitties and there's mama going, oh, what are you guys doing here? Don't do this to me on the hottest day of the year. So I got a little bowl of water and put it out there. I said, are we going to feed these cats? Here's what we'll do. We're going to have to trap them. I don't know how we trap three cats at once. That's a little trickier. Do we take mom first? Do we take the kitties first? Who freaks out more when they go? So meanwhile, we put out a little bit of food for them and started strategizing how we were going to capture them, get them fixed. And then you got to decide whether to release them again find somebody. So if anybody wants a kitty, I got two in the yard. All right, they're really cute little kitties. So that was fine and well, fine and dandy until, a week ago. And a dead rat ended up in the yard. And then another. And I don't mind cats killing dead rats, but I walked out the back door one morning and one of those little cute little kitties had its head buried in the carcass of the rat and was ripping off flesh and kind of looked up at me and smiled and said, hi, good morning. And I went back to feeding on the rat. I said, okay, the bloom is off the rose here, folks.
This story has took a wicked turn.
It took
friend.
A wicked turn. It did. And then there was another dead rat in the yard the other day, and we kind of stopped feeding the kitties at that point. Went, you guys are doing really well. Mom's really good at this because those rats are almost as big as she is. Because she's a tiny little kitty. And then this morning I walked out the back door and there was a dead rat on the porch. I went, okay, now you've crossed the line. You've crossed the line here. And I thought, well, who better to tell this story to than my naturalist friend? Because you understand about nature, what happens?
Well, I think you're lucky that so far the only discernible prey have been rats. I don't think that
I don't want to find a robin.
Norway rats, brown rats are particularly something to lament. But there is no question the data are clear that cats are a major factor of bird mortality.
Oh,
killing
I know that.
Tens, if not hundreds of millions of birds a year.
I saw
if you have cats, that's great. Please keep them inside because it really is destructive of native rodents. You happen to have rats in our backyard. We have white-footed mice, a paramiscus, a native mouse, reptile, frogs. I mean, whatever they can get, they'll kill. And so I encourage everyone to be responsible about their pets.
And I read, the figure I've seen is half a billion birds.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Half a billion birds are killed by cats in America. Just America.
There are entire species, the famous Stevens Inlet wren. It's a little island off New Zealand where the lighthouse keeper's cat came back with his bird for five consecutive days, brought in a bird, and it was never seen again. So there are examples of cats actually contributing to the extinction, the very extinction of a species.
Really? Well, yeah, but, we contribute to the extinction of many species.
Well, the cats were brought there by us.
Well, okay, so there you go. there's a connection.
Oh, a huge one.
By the way, my buddy Jennifer Brennan, who's my co-host on Dig in Chicago, which you can watch on Channel 102 on Comcast Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Also go to mydiginchicago.com. Denny, you like it when I do the plug, don't you?
I like it. It's smart.
It's my radio show, pal. I get to say whatever I want. I don't plug it enough. That's my problem. We need more viewers, okay? More viewers.
So you have a radio. You have a TV show, Mike.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, what's it called?
It's called Dig in Chicago, Joel.
Oh, my. It sounds wonderful. When is it?
It's great. It's about gardening and cooking in the Chicago area. Saturdays, 10 a.m., Comcast Channel 102. Did I tell you that?
I will not miss it. Life has changed now. It's a sea change.
The reason I tell you is I just got a text from Jennifer Brennan, my co-host. She says, would Joel lecture for me at Chalet? She wants to bring you up to do a lecture.
Sure. I mean, have her email me or call me. That would be great.
I'm going to set it up. See?
All right.
I got connections, pal.
All right.
I'll get you, get you in all the best garden centers in town.
There you go. There. I actually do want to ask you about a garden thing off the air at some point, but...
You afraid to ask me on the air?
The McHenry, you and I met at the McHenry, what's the formal name of that? It's a wonderful event.
Oh, yeah,
McHenry Garden Club.
The garden, it's the Propagation and Preservation Committee, something CCP, and I always feel like it sounds like the old Soviet Union initials. Now you got me. I know the garden, is it the... I think it's the Wildlife Preservation and Propagation Committee, WPCP, and they're in McHenry. And every spring, they do a wonderful, wonderful seminar. I've spoken at it. You've spoken at it.
Yeah, that's where
we are for the first time several years ago. They're doing great stuff. One of the things I want to talk to them about is they do this native plant mentoring program, teaching people how to plant natives in their yard, which I just think is an awesome thing because I think native plants are intimidating to people. Cindy, you disagree, huh? Yeah. Yeah?
She's a gardener in the house.
Yeah, but she works on it all the time. I think the people who are used to the same old, and I'm going to tell you, I have a show here. I talk about gardening. There's a tyranny of the traditional. There's a terrible tyranny of the traditional because you talk about gardens in a plant, and where does it go to right away? Roses. But I'll bet they're not native roses. You know, we do have native roses.
But they're not as pretty and big, and they haven't been bred for generations.
Well, even the cone flowers. How many different colors of coneflower do we need, really?
Oh, absolutely. Liatris. I mean, we'll talk about that hopefully.
No, they're not breeding liatris to have different colors, are they?
Well, I don't know about different colors, but there's certainly different strains that aren't specifically the three or four species that grow in northern Illinois.
And I'm glad to hear you call it liatris and not liatris or... Latris or, you know.
Maybe the next time I say it, I will. Some of these words just come out.
It's just so funny. Who was it that was, I think it was Jennifer, again, was pronouncing something some way, and I was pronouncing it another way. And I said, can't we just agree on something? And she said, Michael, it's Latin. Nobody speaks the language anymore. We don't know how it's pronounced.
Actually, can't we just all get along?
Yeah, exactly. can't we just speak a language? And, okay. You were going to talk about liatris. What? So let's just dive in. By the way, do you have a question about native plants? Do you have a question about... We'll get to Project Passenger Pigeon in a little bit.
And prairies. That's
and
what
prairies.
We were,
well, you were wandering in a prairie.
Yesterday morning.
All right, before you get to liatris,
okay,
and I'll get sidetracked and never get back. But tell me about the Markham Prairie, and it's actually the Gensburg Markham Prairie, isn't it?
That's correct. The Gensburg family owned the land that was eventually donated, maybe sold at some reduced price to Northeastern Illinois University, which is the principal owner. Other entities own part of it as well. This area used the dominant landscape prior to Europeans arriving was prairie, tall grass prairie. And
really?
Sorry. And as time goes on, there's almost none of it left. And in fact, the 1978 Natural Areas Inventory said that for any remnant prairie to still survive, there had to be at least two reasons for it. Those reasons could be they're too wet, they tended to flood, they were next to railroads, they were in inappropriate places to build. Some of those factors came together in keeping Markham Prairie extant. And there's the big section of Markham Prairie, and there's a number of other smaller prairies, and the whole aggregate is known as the Indian Boundary Prairies. Markham Prairie, right along the tollway, just as you're heading south on 294, just before you get to 80, on your right is this big grassy area, mm-hmm. and that's Markham Prairie. And in my mind, it's certainly one of the most beautiful, one of the highest quality. It's never been plowed, and it was grazed decades ago. There was a time when flower merchants from Chicago would go out there and cut the blazing stars to sell. So there was
you
that
can't
kind
do
of
that
this,
anymore, you, can you?
No, you can't. And and it's been managed by Bob Betts and then Ron Panzer, some really good, thoughtful scientists who balance the kinds of management you need. So that's rich in insects and it's got beautiful flowers. This time of year, the blazing stars, there's two species right now. It's the Prairie Blazing Star. Again, there yesterday, you show up, walk north along the path, and there's just, you know, wands of amethyst blowing in the wind with tiger swallowtails and monarchs riding them like rodeo cowboys. It's beautiful, Mike.
And saying, yeehaw!
Yeehaw! Yeehaw! Exactly. That's the Henslow sparrow going slick, slick, slick in the distance. So I would recommend anybody who has, you know, an interest that's just, you know, there are other prairies and we that are among my favorites. But right now and the next couple, 3 weeks, I would say that Markham is certainly, even if you didn't care about prairies, Mike, even if you don't care at all about nature, if somebody at least has to acknowledge this is pretty. If you don't at least acknowledge this is pretty, then we don't have anything to talk about.
Wow. All right. Well, something that you said to me, you're a passionate guy. Just tell me it's pretty, please.
I'll leave after that. Don't come back if you don't want.
You know what? We're going to take a phone call. I'm going to get back to you on that because we've got a phone call coming in from California. Dave in San Francisco, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, greetings. Hey, you know, I've got relatives down in St. Louis, and they're obviously being hit by this heat spell. And the one of the things that I've learned about with global warming is that, you know, of course, the Earth is just getting dried out. It gets baked, and there's basically a desertification. So when I heard you talking about the prairies, you know, that's a very important aspect of being able to cool the planet down. And so I was wondering how you could basically convince the counties or, you know, there are a lot of agencies of government, whether it's the water district or, you know, you may have the highway department or the school district that may own tens of thousands of acres. And if they were convinced that it would be a smart idea to allow these prairie grasses to get reestablished, you know, the water instead of getting poured onto, rainwater getting poured onto concrete, going into a gutter and then going straight to the river and then flooding, you know, New Orleans, if it could be put back into the earth in the aquifer, you know, it would stabilize the rest of the nation. So I just one little factoid I learned the other day. Apparently, gophers and prairie dogs are almost on the endangered species list because people are just wiping them out. And in the prairies, they used to be since they dig those little tunnels, they've made the gutters, which made it easier for rainwater to get down into the earth and create, you know, refilling up the aquifers. And if we wiped out the gophers and the prairie dogs, we'd essentially be, you know, turning the earth into packed concrete. And so I'm just wondering if you've got any comments on any of those.
Wow, that's an interesting observation there, Dave. Joel?
There's a number of things. Prairie dogs are an animal of the short grass prairie to the west. So they probably weren't found any farther, east than maybe eastern Kansas. They used to be so abundant that, in fact, there were whole counties in Kansas that became depopulated as a consequence of them back in the 1880s, virtually.
So why? Why did they become depopulated?
Because agriculture, there were so many of them. I mean, they did better after the cattle. I mean, you know, they'd have the cattle drives and there were routes for them. And where the ground became compacted, this made me sound counterintuitive, but the prairie dogs would come in and there were so many of them and agriculture took such a hit that there were a handful of counties. Now, since that time, they've been eradicated and the principal victim was the virtual extinction of the black-footed ferret, which is a small weasel-like animal that lives exclusively on prairie dogs and which was eliminated from the wild. They're raised now in captivity and released, although as I understand it, there's a put and take. I mean, there isn't any place where there's ongoing reproduction. So basically, there's that. Out where we are, it's
Wait, well, okay, you got to stop for a second there.
Sure.
See, Dave, he's going to go down this rabbit hole for us. It's not a prairie dog hole, but a rabbit hole.
And well, all those holes add up to putting water back in the aquifer. So, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to let you go, Dave. We're going to continue this conversation. That's a very good point. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much from California. Which
that's great. But the point is that the black-footed ferret controlled the prairie dog population or contributed to its decline?
No, the black-footed ferret evolved with prairie dogs. So they were a predator that lived exclusively among and on prairie dogs. And so as prairie dog numbers were eradicated, as they declined through specific human efforts to wipe them out.
Once again, we're really good at killing species, aren't we?
We are very good at killing.
We are the best. We're number one.
There's nothing that spurs human imagination more than figuring out how to kill something. I mean, you know, think of all the wonderful things that come out of wars, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, so be that as it may, this is one animal that can't survive without prairie dogs. And there were down to a handful of animals in a place called Metisi, Wyoming. A dog found some, and the federal government caught them. They're bred, and they've now been reintroduced in various
places.
So we
just got lucky that species even exists anymore.
Correct. That's a good way to put it.
we don't deserve it.
You know, his basic thought, his basic premise that, you know, nowadays, and this touches on something, I don't know, whenever there's a flood, and it floods frequently in the Chicago region, which I know best and most comfortable talking about, there's always some attractive news lady with a bright yellow raincoat and boots standing in front of some house that's been flooded out, watching the sobbing homeowner. And they talk about that. There's a learning moment here, which is simply that when you pour water on a brick, the water runs off. If you pour it on a sponge, it soaks it up. And the fact that we have covered the ground with impermeable surfaces, houses, roads, that means the water can't soak in. It has to flow into channels. You don't have to be smart to know that. I mean, it's pretty clear. And to the extent that there's things we can do to minimize that, this gentleman's right. I mean, we doesn't have to be tall. I mean, tall grass.
But it's not just the prairie dogs. It's not just the burrowing animals, although I would speculate that it all plays a role in it.
Absolutely.
You know, and one of the things you talked about right at the get-go here was being at Markham, which has never been plowed. Wouldn't that be part of that?
Prairie dogs never lived here. Gophers are probably restricted to the sand areas. So gophers and prairie dogs aren't part of really much of our prairie dogs, not at all. So what you had here were the plants. I mean, you had these prairie plants, and I think you know this, Mike. There's a group of plants that are some of the most conspicuous. They're called Silphium. That's the genus.
Yes.
The two species most prominent.
I've got a few dozen that have escaped into my neighbor's backyard. So
and those are what? Compass plant
cup plant.
Okay, cup plant. Two other real
our compass plant
and prairie dock.
Right.
They're like 6 feet tall. They have 15-foot roots. You know, Aldo Leopold has a beautiful essay on them and how they go almost down to China. So with those kinds of deep roots, and there's other prairie plants with shallow roots, but they're brushy. You know, they just spread out to capture the water. Well, when water falls on a soil that has this incredible twining of roots, it tends to sink. And so to the extent we don't have that, it contributes to flooding, and the water doesn't soak in. So that is an issue. I mean, rain gardens are a small way and a very local way to try to mitigate that, for example.
All right. Something you said to me the other day, and then I got to take a short break.
We can go forever.
I know we could. Folks, we're going to be preempting the rest of the shows for the whole day. And I'm just going to turn Joel loose. And then when he goes too far, Cindy will rein him in. That's what you do, right, Cindy?
she does. This is like the Kankakee River with 2,000 bends. You know, we just don't flow straight here, Mike.
But we were talking about restoration projects. All right. And one of the things obviously you like about Markham is that you said it was grazed, but it was never plowed under. So that's that's a good thing, I assume, in comparison to a restoration project. Does what happens? What's different about the land in a restoration project? I guess it depends what was there until you restored it. You know, because you look at Madewin, and they're trying to restore 19,000 acres. How is that going to be different from Markham? Or eventually, will they be very similar?
Well, as I said, one difference between Markham and these restorations is Markham is about 10,000 years old. Anything that's anthropogenic is going to be 10, 20. I think the oldest one is Ray Schulenberg's around here, and I'm most familiar with this. There's the prairie up at the University of Wisconsin Arboretum in Madison, Ray Schulenberg's Prairie Morton Arboretum. I mean, those are some of the older restoration. But even then, what are they, 30, 40, 50 years old?
Yeah, you're talking about
They're not thousands of years old.
Right.
What Madewin has going for it is size, and size really matters when you talk about natural areas.
You just made my day.
And, the area out in western Illinois, they're big. And also, there are tiny remnants of native prairies. And so you work from the native ones and help them expand, you know. And so 19,000 acres, you can have a lot of things living there, and you could burn, you know, a third of it. There it gives you latitude where a small site, you just don't have as much. Because, I mean, Markham has an incredible array of insects. It's got Aphrodite butterfly. It's a prairie fertilary that is pretty uncommon. They've introduced regal fritillaries, which is one of the rarest of the big butterfly stunning things. And, you know, it's because of the quality, the diversity of plants that are there that all contribute to making it such a special place, in my view.
And I've got some photos that were taken yesterday.
Oh, good. I'm glad Ray sent those to
Yes,
you.
Ray sent them to me. I want to thank Ray. How do you pronounce his last name?
Vetter.
Vetter? Okay. I would have said Vegter. It's Vetter. Okay.
I think so.
V-E-G-T-E-R.
Yeah.
But he's got this site called mypieceofheavenphoto.com, and I've got a link to that. And he graciously allowed us to put some photos that he took just yesterday. And they're up on the site if you go to mikenovak.net and go to this week's show. All right. You know, when we come back, if we don't talk about the Project Passenger Pigeon, we won't get to it.
Okay.
Then again, if we take over the whole day of broadcasting here, we will alienate all of our listeners. So let's we'll be back with naturalist and author Joel Greenberg. Stick around.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
I'm trying to show Joel photo that Ron Cowgill. Ron's been bugging me for the last few days about this plant that's growing in his yard, and he says, "Is this a native?" And apparently it just popped up.
I don't think it is, but Mike, if you could email that to me, I'll get you the name of it.
Okay, Ron, we'll get you your information. Just, you know, don't get your knickers in a twist, pal, all right? All right, now, just because you're feeling all hot and wilty from the heat doesn't mean that your plants have to be that way, too. For one, you could try natives, which would be a really good thing. But I want to get to that question, too, because I've had people write to me, Joel, and say, "My coneflower's drooping. I thought it was a native plant." And you talk about different soils and prairies, so we'll get to that in a little bit. But if you want to pick up something new and fresh, you can go to Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood. Are your containers and window boxes looking a little sad? It's not that hard to transform them by adding some new plants to the mix. How about the ever-improving varieties of coleus? They add life and color to plantings in sun or shade. Gorgeous perennials have just arrived, including Allium, butterfly weed, not to be confused with butterfly bush, lamb's ear, climbing hydrangea, new colors of echinacea, and more. Plus fun new annuals like eucalyptus, dwarf ruellia in pink and purple. I like ruellia. I've got it blooming in my yard right now. It's a perennial petunia. And are you familiar with Borrelia?
I'm not, but you are, Cindy.
No, but I know there's a native petunia.
Yeah, I think that's the one I have. I think I got it from Roy Diblick, and it likes dry shade.
Okay.
Go figure. Yeah. And then it pops up. It's late to arrive, and so it pops up when you least expect it, and suddenly, bloop, it's blooming these little purple flowers. Very.
Yeah, they're growing in my yard, too.
Yeah. See, you have it as well. Anyway, where were we? Borrelia in pink and purple, more zinnias and chartreuse sweet potato vine. Need something delivered? Well, Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center delivers to most neighborhoods in Chicago for a very reasonable fee. Go to ChristyWeber.com, and that's spelled ChristyWeber.com, and click on Garden Center, or visit Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook, or just stop by 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. And congratulations to Christy Weber Landscapes on the opening of their new greenhouse at 4427 West Fulton Street in Chicago.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Have we hit the dog days of summer yet? Of course, Florence and the machine say the dog days are over, but I think they're just messing with us. And if you don't understand that reference, Google it. Anyway, one way to get past the dog days is to have a copy of the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. In it, you'll find the story of a Batavia woman who is way too organized for her own good. She came up with a 30-year master plan for her yard that included food and flowers. And 20 years into the mission, she's right on schedule. She even grows blueberries in Illinois. If that isn't annoying enough, there's the story of yet another garden, this one in Lamont, where the owners claim that the secret to everything is mulch, 30 to 75 cubic yards at a time, which they apply to the almost 200 trees that they've planted on the property. A lot of them are oaks, so it's actually pretty cool. Of course, there's also the vegetable garden and their two ponds and the perennials and, oh, read it and weep. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It will give you a pretty good cry, too. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Everybody's dancing. You know, I have turned into Dance Factory here today. I don't know what it is about the techno music this morning. This is one of the original techno songs. Here we are. Yeah, we're going back in time. Flashback, the Mike Novak Show. On Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Hey. Sorry, Joel. See?
An eclectic approach is best.
Yeah. As eclectic as I can possibly get. Or did you mean electric?
Both.
Electric and eclectic. That's author and naturalist Joel Greenberg in studio. And let's... Okay, I got to ask Denny, have we had the special guests, have they shown up at all?
No.
Okay.
No special guests, but we do have a caller on the line, the gentleman who took the photographs you were talking about earlier.
Oh, which line is he on?
He's on line one.
All right, let's go to line one. And that, of course, would be Ray. How you doing, Ray?
All right, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good.
Now, hi, Ray. Thanks a lot for calling.
Oh, no problem. First off, I just want to thank you and Cindy for being such a gracious tour guide yesterday. That was just an awesome place. And I do have a question. How the heck do you find places like that?
Well,
I don't know. Don't ask me.
Sure.
I mean,
okay. Well, I mean, the way at this stage of the game, most sites like that are protected. If they weren't protected, they would have been destroyed. You know, there may be an occasional exception. So one thing would be to go on the list of Illinois nature preserves. Most of the best prairies, Illinois Beach and Wolf Road Prairie.
I'm aware of the Wolf Road Prairie. That's another really a little gold mine to walk through.
It is. And Lockport Prairie, that's a prairie. There's a small section of the lower Des Plaines River that has dolomite prairie. It's a different kind of prairie altogether. And there is a federally endangered plant that lives at Lockport Prairie. And the rediscovery of the Heinz Emerald Dragonfly occurred there. So there's some really rare things there, Lockport Prairie. Goose Lake Prairie is the largest prairie. That's a state park near in Grundy County near Morris. So I would recommend, Ray, just go on, look up Illinois Nature Preserves, and you'll see where the best prairies in the state are. There's some little ones like at Morton Grove. There's one in Glenview, they're scattered around. There's a couple in DuPage County. Vermont Cemetery Prairie is a cool place in Will County, so that's what I would recommend. That's a good way to just go out and visit some of these high quality natural areas.
Mike, as a side note, yesterday when Joel first got in touch with me about going on this excursion, he gave me directions to it, and I'm familiar with that area. I actually drive a truck for a trade, but the photography is my dream, and he gave me directions to it, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'll see a parking lot, and no, it's nothing like that. You drive to the end of the road, and there it is, and it's all fenced in, and if you don't know it, how to get in, tough beans, because, you know, it's the gate is locked.
Yeah. So,
quote unquote.
It's a quote unquote. I mean, the fact is there's a chain over it, so it's really open to anybody. It's just so that, you know, a horse couldn't walk in, but a person, something with opposable thumbs could simply lift over. So it's not quite as formidable. So anybody could get there. It's right off of Whiffle Street near the McDonald's in Markham.
And the other thing I got to point out, though, is that Ray told me we had a little chat. I wanted to get his permission to run the photos on the website, so we chatted yesterday. And he says he used to listen to me when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial, and he didn't know that I had ended up here. And I want to say, Ray, it's 4 years, okay? have you ever heard of Google, okay? Just, you know, no, it's okay, but I get it all the time. It's people say, oh, I didn't know you were someplace else. No, yeah, you're right. I was dead for a while, and now I'm back.
Well, I can relate. I mean, I'm obsessed about something that's been extinct for 100 years, Mike. So, you know, anything in the 20th century is suspect by my view.
Well, see, and I guess we could just say my career is extinct. So it's the same thing, you know?
Wait a minute. No, because, Mike, you came back. Who knows? Maybe the passenger pigeon will make a return.
There we go. We're going to clone Mike Novak, and there'll be hundreds of millions of them.
Yikes. That's too many. Well, Ray, thank you so much, and I'm glad you got to see the Markham Prairie. My turn next. I want to get over there.
We wanted you down there.
I know.
Well.
I wanted that too. So yesterday was just not a good day, but I'm going to get down there, and I'm going to get a little tour from Joel.
I appreciate the plug and for my website, and I hope everybody not only looks at the pictures of the prairie, but of the pictures just from my backyard that I've taken. You were talking about what you find in your backyard nowadays, and it's just amazing. You know, where I live, I have a resident Cooper's hawk, and you were talking about your gross story, if you have a minute.
Yeah, just a minute. Yeah, okay. Give me a gross story. You got another gross story?
Well, real quick, I was working out in the garage, middle of winter. I come in, I look out in the backyard, and sitting on the lowest branch of one of my trees is a Cooper's hawk. And I go inside, and it was so cold out, the back storm door was frozen over. I called my wife, Cindy. My wife's name is Cindy also. I told her, come in the back door. You got to see this. And I open up the back door. Just as I open up the back door, a mourning dove goes flying right in front of the Cooper's Hawk, and the Cooper's Hawk takes off and snatches it right out of midair.
Oh, my goodness.
Feathers and all. And my wife just looks at me and goes, you had to open the door and show me that. So, I will leave you with that. You gentlemen have a good day, and I thank you again.
All right. Thanks, my pleasure, Ray. Thanks for calling.
All right.
Bye. 773-763-9278. We actually, all right, did you want me to go to line three or line four?
Line three.
Line three, and that is?
That is Fran in Oaklawn.
Hi, Fran in Oaklawn. How are you?
Hey, Mike. I've called before about my prairie. I own 10 acres out in the boonies, and I've been restoring it for almost 20 years now. That's an aside. As I listened to your last caller, I thought I'd put in a plug for Wild Ones and the Nature Conservancy. If your listeners are interested in this sort of thing, or maybe not doing work, but just seeing, you know, a real prairie or a real savanna or a forest restoration, they should associate themselves with, they should go to a meeting. They can Google up Wild Ones or Nature Conservancy and find out where these people meet, what they do, and it would open up a whole new universe for many of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have no problem with that. In fact, I'm trying to right now as you're speaking get to the website. I think the Wild Ones is forwild.org, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I should just say that Nature Conservancy is the entity that manages, that provides the funding to allow Markham to be taken care of. So definitely there's a site that they've done very good work.
Yeah. So
they don't own it, but they manage it.
I'm happy to do the plug. And there you go. If you go to www. Oh, and they managed to get the URL is wildones.org. It's one word, wildones.org. And I say this because here's another story about back when I was at Gargantua Radio. I had Suzanne Malik McKenna, former commissioner of the Department of the Environment, on the show. And we were talking about Wild Ones. And she said, oh, let me call it up. She had a computer there. She said, I'll just put it up. And her face just blanched. Okay. And I said, what's going on? She said, I typed in Wild Ones and a bunch of porn sites are coming up and I can't make it stop. I can't make it stop.
I got to get to my computer right now.
No, but they, but that
it's gonna
was
be popular. It's going to be popular.
It was so funny. I said, I don't know how to stop it either. So we unplugged the computer. That was the only thing we could think of. And I just said, I'm unplugging this computer. So, but now, yeah, it's wildones.org, wildones.org. And of course, Nature Conservancy. I don't even know what that is, but it's probably, you know, all I got to do is type in Nature Conservancy and I think that's a great idea. And I appreciate, so much, your contribution, Fran. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye bye. 773-763-9278. Where do you want me to go next, Dennis?
Line four.
Chris, we'll go to Chris. I can hear the hum. So it must be Chris from Palatine.
Sorry about that. I don't understand why. But by the way, Mike, you've never heard the motto, nature red in tooth and claw, regarding pussycats and hawks.
What's that motto?
Nature red in tooth and claw.
Yeah, is that Byron? It's one of the British poets.
Oh, okay. All right. No.
Nature is red in tooth and claw because God didn't make animals have chloroplasts, so animals kill things to eat, and such is the nature of life.
And God didn't make honky tonk women either, okay? So there we go.
Honky tonk angels. No, but I was going to ask.
Honky tonk. Yeah, honky tonk angels. Sorry. Okay. That, you're right. You even got that right, Chris.
You win. What does he win, Mike?
We're going to have three more hours of the show.
That's fantastic. Hit that bell, Mike.
Where's my bell? Hold on. No, this is what you win, Chris. This is where you go.
That's it. Great. Okay, that's what I wanted. I wanted to ask, I don't know if you've ever been up to Rock Cut State Park. I believe it's there in Rockford. They're doing, I believe, they have a prairie restoration there. and also Buffalo Creek Forest Preserve in Buffalo Grove has one. Now, what would be the difference between a prairie and a grassland?
Well, the distinction that I mean, prairies are grasslands, but the way I use prairie, and I think the way that it's used among conservationists is this native grassland? Is it a native community with plants that are indigenous to this region? If you were not to, 99% or more, I mean, only 0.02% of Illinois is prairie. So everything else that's grass is Eurasian grasses, Eurasian plants. And so those things can support a good variety of wildlife. I mean, most animals don't care whether the grass it's perched on is prairie or not, its structure. But in terms of prairie,
In terms of food, they care.
Well, I mean, the fact is, Mike, that if an animal required real prairie, it would have become extinct because there's so little real prairie left. The exception would be insects. So I'm talking about vertebrates.
Okay.
You know, birds. You can find Henslow sparrows, and you can find meadowlarks and savanna sparrows in a lot of different environments. So to answer your question, the difference would be, as I'm using it here, is prairie refers to those extraordinarily rare remnants of native plants, whereas grassland is anything that's broad grass. I suppose your lawn might be considered as such because grass dominates those little ecosystems, those little deserts behind your house.
You know, in Deer Grove East, they're doing a big, you know, preservation and restoration there. Is that considered grass prairie? Or, are you familiar with? First of all, are you familiar with the?
Well, I'm not with those with deer. Deer Grove is an interesting place because it was the very first piece of land that the Cook County Forest Preserve bought when it became a forest preserve in 1913.
Yes.
They if they're going to do a prairie restoration, then, you know, they're certainly easy enough to buy, you know, big blue stem and to create some semblance of a prairie. So I'm not sure exactly what they had in mind.
Okay, I know they're doing a lot of different things up in that area. Yeah. And unfortunately, though, Mike, I also have to report in mourning that the ash borer beetle has invaded it, and there have a number of ash trees that have big red or orange X's on them that they're going to be taking down.
Where?
At Deer Grove West.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not surprising. It's going to happen, Chris. It's just something we have to get used to at this point.
Are there going to be any of our eastern trees left with all of these?
Probably not. Yeah, I don't know.
Everything?
Chris, great hearing from you. Thanks a lot, and have a great Sunday.
You too.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. All right, let me take who are we going next to? Three, and who is that?
That's line three. It is a Joel Greenberg fan by the name of Mary.
Ooh. A Joel Greenberg fan.
Named Mary. Okay, Mary, right. Welcome to the show.
No, wait. Hang on, Mary. We'll get to you. We're going to tease that. All right. I don't know what's going on here, but we got to get the Project Passenger Pigeon, too, and I love taking the phone calls. We'll get to that as quickly as we can.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Thank you, Peggy. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Actually, it's more from the New York Times article that was posted on the Care of Trees Facebook page. And I talked about it in the first hour a little bit. Quoting from the Times, trees release vast clouds of beneficial chemicals. On a large scale, some of these aerosols appear to help regulate the climate. Others are antibacterial, antifungal, and antiviral. Taxane from the Pacific yew tree has become a powerful treatment for breast and other cancers. Aspirin's active ingredient comes from willows. Trees are greatly underutilized as an ecotechnology. Working trees could absorb some of the excess phosphorus and nitrogen that run off farm fields and help heal the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Trees are also the planet's heat shield. They keep the concrete and asphalt of cities and suburbs 10 or more degrees cooler and protect our skin from the sun's harsh UV rays. The Texas Department of Forestry has estimated that die-off of shade trees will cost Texans hundreds of millions of dollars more for air conditioning. See how important trees are? Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your valuable trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their businesses, people, and their love for trees.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited. 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
See, I just got happy music today. It's all happy music. We got a few minutes left. Before we get to Mary, I would be remiss if we'll just save that because it's a tease and we're trying to figure out who Mary is. But Project Passenger Pigeon, you now have a website, and you it's passengerpigeon.org. So that's simple enough. You have a Facebook page, which
we now thrive in cyberspace, so that's great.
You thrive better than the passenger pigeon
in real space. Absolutely.
Does right. Speaking of birds, I got a tweet from a friend of mine who said that I got it wrong. He says that I got it wrong on the billion birds. I said half a billion, actually.
For what?
And what? Deaths. From cats.
Oh.
And he's a big cat lover, so I get that. But still, it's a lot. That's the point. Maybe half a billion is too many, but it's probably more than fly into buildings, is what I'm guessing. And that's what I've read. So it's just hard to say. And then another friend wrote and said, put a breakaway collar with a bell on it for those cats who live or visit outside. How am I going to get a collar on them, Rosemary? And I'm not trying to. She said, give wildlife a break. Yeah, I really want to. She says, don't despise them. They're just trying to survive. I get that.
They're not wildlife. They're feral animals that we brought there. This is all about trying to preserve wildlife, trying to preserve the creatures that did not evolve with small felines like house cats.
But getting back to animals that developed here, like the passenger pigeon that was here in the billions and outnumbered human beings at one point.
Absolutely.
And we wiped them out in about 20 years. I mean, we started early, but really the
way I liked it, in 1860, there was a flight near Toronto that probably exceeded a billion birds. At the maximum in 1800, there were probably 3 to 5 billion. By 1860, there were anywhere from 1 to 3 billion. 1900, the last wild birds were shot. And on September 1st, 1914, the last of the species died. So, the trajectory downward, I mean, in the 1870s, there were still hundreds of millions. So you're right. I mean, 30 years or so, it doesn't really matter whether it was 20 or 30, but it was within a very short time.
We got incredibly efficient at killing.
At killing, absolutely, yeah. With telegraphs and railroads. And so just to reiterate, what we're doing with this project is it's the centenary of the bird's extinction, and we want to use this remarkable story, unprecedented in human history, I believe, to get people to think about current issues, people's relationships with nature, extinction, how to create sustainable relationships with other species. And so Mike mentioned those two things. The only other thing I wanted to mention was, there's two things real quick. There's been a lot of museum exhibits that are going. The Smithsonian is now going to do something major. You know, Peggy Notabart in Chicago, Harvard, the Peabody Museum at Yale. So all across the East. I actually got an email from a guy from a museum in Cameroon, Africa, wanting to be very involved. He finds the story compelling. And the final thing is we have all this stuff going on. Good news. We still need money, and if any, particularly for the movie. And so I make a little plug for that. If anyone's interested, check the website.
Or go to Facebook, contact me.
Any financial help would be really appreciated.
So, yeah, send your money along. They want to make this happen. All right. Finally, Mary, we got a minute here. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. Good morning, Joel.
Hi.
Good morning, Mike. I just wanted you to comment on, I don't know if you're aware that the tollway system is wanting to begin construction of an area around Route 53 through the wetlands there. And there are probably hundreds of species of birds there. There are heron and egrets and all sorts of birds you can imagine in the wetlands there. And they basically were talking about connecting a tollway from that area.
Right. Is this the 55 connection to 65?
No, I think she's talking about up 53 near what's the shopping center? The huge
Grove.
Okay. Well, all right. We're aware of it, Mary. That's all the time we have. So at least I appreciate you hanging on and that we talk about that. It's just one more issue. You know, every time we build something like that, we encroach. Joel Greenberg, Cindy, thank you so much for being here. Go to Project Passenger Pigeon. Go green or go home.